Welcome to Your Turn. Hi, this is Mike Causey. I'm fresh from 2 weeks vacation, so I now know even less than usual, but we're going to have a wonderful show today. Going to be talking with three experts in the field about a variety of things, but we're, as always, we're following the money. Going to be talking about pay raises and pay freezes, possible changes in the cost of living adjustment formula for both retirees and for people who are retiring in the future, the state of health insurance premiums and how you have a stake in that in the debt reduction and borrowing limit talks that are going on now, the fate of the thrift savings plan if there is some kind of a budget impasse, and what's going to happen to FERS employees, people under the Federal Employees Retirement System, who may, and we emphasize may, be hit with a permanent 5% cut in take-home pay because of some things that Congress and the White House are looking at now. So we're going to be talking first with Dan Adcock. Dan is legislative director of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, and he looks at it from somebody who works the Hill every day on behalf of legislation for federal employees. And then coming up in the second hour, we're going to be talking with two expert reporters, Steve Watkins and Steve Losey from the Federal Times, and get their take. And they may have a slightly different version of the what is likely to play out, but it should be helpful. And I plan to do a lot of catching up as a result of talking to these three folks. So Dan Adcock is with us. Dan, are you there?
I am, Mike, and welcome back.
Hey, thank you, sir, and thanks for taking time out. I know you had had some family business today, so thank you for juggling that around. Dan, I know that NARF, because you, so many people think of NARF as a retiree organization, but years ago you expanded your charter, and you now have a lot of people who are working for the government, and they're going to retire someday, but the idea is get in while you can, join up, get the magazine, get the benefits, and learn about it so that when you go into retirement, your retirement plan is there. That said, so you're sort of covering the waterfront when you watch legislation now. And I think one of the things that you're primarily concerned about, and I saw your bulletin when I came back from vacation, is this change in the way the cost of living adjustments, the COLAs, are calculated in Social Security.
Right. Well, yes, and in fact, that, you know, we can go back even much further than just the last few weeks, and that's back in November and December when the President's Fiscal Commission first came out with their report. One of the things they recommended was use of something called the chained CPI, and sort of the technical version is the C-CPI-U. And the thinking has been amongst some economists is that the current CPI that's used to set COLAs for not only federal civilian retirement, but also for military retirement and Social Security, which is the Consumer Price Index W, or the Consumer Price Index for wage earners and clerical workers, that it slightly provides an overestimate of inflation, and their contention is that using the CPI W, or the CPI, the chain CPI, would be a better measure of inflation, because they would argue that that it does a better job of measuring what's called the substitution effects. Like in a down economy, you go to the grocery store, you're looking at chicken and steak. You're not going to get the steak you usually get. You're going to get the chicken. And so they think that, some economists think, that that would be a better measure. But the problem with using the chain CPI is that it would result in a lower COLA for all three major federal retirement programs, Social Security, federal civilian retirement, and military retirement. And, you know, and of course, the difficulty for older Americans in this situation is that in the last 2 years, because there's been negative inflation, there has been no COLA paid whatsoever. But at the same time, people's health insurance, certainly federal employees who are in the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program, have seen their insurance go up in the double-digit range the last couple of years. So they're actually receiving a smaller annuity checks. So the problem, the overall problem, is unfortunately, you know, in a sort of strict academic sense, the economists can debate whether or not the current CPI doesn't do an adequate job of measuring the substitution effect going on in inflation. But the practical part of it, where the rubber meets the road for older Americans, is that the current CPI, the CPI-W, doesn't do a very good job of measuring, especially the disproportionate share of healthcare costs that elderly Americans pay. So this would, you know, the net effect of this for Social Security beneficiaries, for federal civilian retirees, and military retirees would be that they would lose literally hundreds of dollars every year, and would mean a significant reduction in their Social Security, federal civilian, military retirement benefits.
Well, you made an interesting point, and I had forgotten it, and you were saying that this proposal originally, and I know it's been around from time to time, but came out of the President's Deficit Reduction Group.
Right.
And so I think so many people now, and the unions have helped in this, but so many people focus on the Republicans, the House Republicans, and particularly the Tea Party Republicans, and they are seen as the villain and the instigators of all of these cuts. But it should be pointed out that the two-year federal pay freeze was a proposal from the White House, and that the President's Commission had actually recommended a three-year pay freeze, and now this use of this so-called chained CPI, which is more flexible and would result in, experts say, would result in smaller COLAs in the future and forever, I guess, for retirees. This is also an idea that's come out of the President's Commission.
Right. Well, and then there's, and of course, the reason why we're talking about this today is in the effort to put together a very large $4 trillion reduction deal as part of the effort to pass the debt limit by August 2nd, before the talks collapsed over the weekend. When that much larger package was being considered, one of the things that has been mentioned is that the administration seemed to be warming up to the idea of this particular proposal on using the chain CPI, as well as other changes that might be made to both Social Security and Medicare. But you know, the administration is not the only party that's sympathetic. There's other, you know, there's certainly bipartisan groups of members of Congress on the Hill. I know that publicly, Senator Mark Kirk from Illinois has said he's supportive of this proposal. So is Ken Conrad, a senator from North Dakota, who's Democrat and chairman of the Senate Budget Committee. So, amongst a lot of folks who we would call budget hawks on both sides of the aisle, there's a lot of interest in this particular proposal. But, you know, we're pushing back on this. We're engaging our members to call their members of Congress on this issue, because it really is going to have a huge impact on older Americans' ability to just pay their daily living expenses, because really all a COLA is a hedge against inflation. But if they're not getting a sufficient hedge against inflation, especially people who are on the lower end of the Social Security scale, or federal civilian retirement, or military retirement, you know, it's going to force them to make some tough decisions. And regrettably for some, they're going to have to choose between things like food and medicine and doctor visits.
Well, it's good that you make that point. And the fact is that the administration panel initially proposed a three-year federal pay freeze. President Obama went with a two-year freeze, but Republicans were delighted to do that, and now some of them are seeking to expand it. And the same with this changed use of this changed CPI. It seems to me, and I heard some figures maybe from you, that this changed CPI would result in smaller cost of living adjustments than under the current formula by something like 0.5 or a half a percentage point. And I believe some member of Congress, maybe a member of the Ways and Means Committee, or even the chairman, had a sort of a precise dollar figure.
Yeah, Congressman Xavier Becerra from California, he's the ranking Democrat on the Social Security Subcommittee on the House Ways and Means Committee. He came out with an estimate that somewhere in the range of about that the average loss would be somewhere in the range of more than $1,000. I don't know I can't remember what the exact figure is, but it's going to have a huge impact. And I know there's been other estimates that were made by the Fiscal Commission or either the Congressional Budget Office to suggest that over a 10-year period, at least on the Social Security side, that the loss in Social Security benefits would be 3% of an individual's benefits. And so you would think that the same would carry over to federal civilian retirement as well as military retirement.
If not more, because the benefits tend to be higher because it's a different formula.
That's right.
One of the things that I'm looking at here, Dan, I want to ask you about what's the downside of this for anybody other than federal workers and retirees. But we need to take a short break here. I'm talking with Dan Adcock, National Active and Retired Federal Employees, and we'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
As we continue to engage government executives who are changing the way government does business, join us next week on location in New York City with special guest Stephen Goldsmith, Deputy Mayor for Operations for the City of New York. How is the city modernizing and consolidating operations for the 21st century? What is New York City doing to shape a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with New York City Deputy Mayor Stephen Goldsmith next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's
going on? June 8th, I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw,
shortness of breath,
please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness,
it's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath, cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and need the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that can save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
911.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. Lupus is an autoimmune disease that can affect various parts of the body, including the skin, joints, heart, lungs, blood, kidneys, and brain. Francis Ashgoins, a deputy director at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, says many symptoms of lupus may be related to internal organs.
One of the biggest things that people don't pay much attention to is aches and pain, okay? So they'll think it's just arthritis. But if you're 22 and you've got the aches and pains and you haven't been running around or doing something extra strenuous, then perhaps that might be a symptom. But it wouldn't be that by itself.
For more on lupus, visit www.couldihavelupus.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Retirement is expensive. You may need 70 to 90% of your pre-retirement income just to maintain your current standard of living. So how do you protect the money you've already saved from market fluctuations? How do you make sure you won't run out of money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Can't wait till Saturday? Then call me today at 301-773-3923.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is the Washington Regional Transplant Community. Organ and tissue donations save lives. 1,800 people are on the list for an organ transplant in our area. Many of them are children. Save a life now by registering to be a donor at the DMV or online at beadonor.org. Everyone has the power to save someone's life. Register now at beadonor.org. This message brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Dan Adcock. He is Legislative Director for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, and they definitely have a dog in this fight on the Capitol Hill, and there are a number of efforts going right now to raise the deficit ceiling so we can raise the debt limit so we can borrow more money. To cut the budget, to do a variety of things. You have recommendations from the President's bipartisan commission, some of whom have been implemented, starting with the 2% or the 2-year federal pay freeze, which may be extended. And they also recommended the use of this so-called chained CPI, as in consumer price index, which would change the yardstick, change the formula used to determine inflation catch-ups for retirees. And the bottom line is, Dan Adcock was saying that some experts have estimated this, if this change occurred, it would work out to about $1,000 a year, a loss to people under Social Security, probably more under the federal retirement system if it was implemented, and it would reduce future benefits by 3% from what they otherwise would have been. And Dan, we're always approaching this from the employee side and from the retiree side, because that's is our constituency. But just to reverse it, Social Security is one of the biggest outlays in the world. They're talking, the argument is not when it's going to go broke, but when that breakout will happen. You're going to have to raise the retirement age and make changes in benefits. If you have an entitlement program like this that covers 1 in 6 Americans, and the baby boomers are coming on board every day, if you have this huge number of people and you make this slight change, mathematical change, which I would assume most people really won't understand. They may think they hate it, but they really won't understand it. If you can save 3% of your future annual costs, other than the people who are hit by it, who's against this?
Well, I think most of the the NARF, in addition to working with all the groups that represent federal and postal workers and retirees, we also we're a member of the Leadership Council of Aging Organizations, which is a coalition of more than 50 groups that represents older Americans. And I know that the majority of the groups, groups like AARP, the Alliance for Retired Americans, National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, these are groups that oppose it, because they know that the purchasing power of their membership will be eroded, and because the current CPI really isn't adequate in providing the inflation protection, especially for seniors that are required to pay much higher health care costs, as they age, than the rest of the population. So there's quite a bit of opposition against it, and you already see, when there's discussion by political observers about each side having to make painful choices, whether it's the Democrats making a painful choice in terms of embracing this particular proposal or the Republicans embracing a tax increase. This is the kind of thing, when we talk about jumping off the ledge together, these particular sacrifices would could potentially alienate key constituencies of both sides of the aisle. And so this one's a big one, and there's certainly a lot of opposition against it amongst organizations that represent older Americans.
Okay. I just wondered, I'm asking not if there is a ground, if you think the average American who gets Social Security understands what's possibly going to happen.
They probably don't, and I think a lot of them do understand that there's, that the program eventually is going to run into a shortfall. And by the way, just as a clarification, mm-hmm. one of the things, when we throw around terms like bankruptcy or insolvency, one of the things, first off, this is something that we don't hit for 30 years, but the other part of it is that even if no laws were changed, the program would still pay 75 cents on the dollar after that point. And for years, Social Security actually has been helping to the surplus in the Social Security system has been helping to make the federal deficit look not as big as it really is. So it's the Social Security Trust Fund for years now has been bailing out the country. The demographic problem, though, that we run into now over the next several years is that there's going to be fewer workers paying payroll taxes supporting current retiree benefits, and so that's the difficulty. But there's a lot of ways to do this, and obviously some are on the revenue side, whether it's adjusting payroll taxes or taking the cap that currently exists, so that right now, if you're I can't remember the exact amount, but it's somewhere about $105,000 a year or in that range. if you don't pay taxes above that amount on Social Security for your Social Security payroll taxes. So, you know, there's proposals to lift that cap or to adjust those payments. You know, there's that can be done on the revenue side, and of course, proposals like the chain CPI or reducing the benefit or raising the age increase, which of course we would have a big problem with. But there's a lot of different ways to do this, and fixing Social Security is a relatively simple operation compared to Medicare because it's either a question of cutting benefits or raising revenues. So the solutions are out there. It's possible to do. It's just a question of, you know, who's willing to take the political heat on some of these proposals that are going to be made. And it's much, and of course, making those changes are a lot more difficult with 40 million Social Security beneficiaries and 77 million Social Security beneficiaries by 2030 versus the 2.3 million federal retirees. Much easier to make changes to our program politically because we're a much smaller constituency.
Sure, and not necessarily popular. One of the things a lot of people don't realize is that when Social Security was enacted, the politicians who did it were very carefully checked the actuarial data, and your payment started at age 65, and at that point in time, the average American, I think, lived to be about 63. So they were hedging some bets there. Dan, one other item, if you could, that you brought up before that seems to be a very real possibility, and that is a change to the formula so that would gradually increase the amount of money that federal workers and retirees have to kick in their share of the formula for their health insurance premium.
Right. It's something that we continue to hear that there's interest in it on Capitol Hill, and that is that, you know, right now the federal government pays about 70% of the premium, and retirees and employees pick up the remaining 30%. So if there's a $10 increase in a monthly premium, that means the government picks up $7 of that increase, and retirees and employees pick up $3. But there was a proposal in the Fiscal Commission report that would index growth in the government. Contribution, or essentially cap growth in the contribution for what the government pays for federal employee benefits program premiums, for the percentage growth in the gross domestic product plus 1%. And when you use that particular index, it almost always comes in under what healthcare inflation is. And so that means every year, more and more costs are being shifted away from the government to retirees and employees so that you get to the point over several years that instead of paying 30% of the premium, you're up to over a 10-year period to about 45. You're paying 45% or more of the premium, and it gets worse and worse every year to the point that many federal employees and retirees, again, people who are on the middle to lower end of the wage or annuity scale, are going to have a hard time paying their share of their health insurance to the point that they just can't afford it anymore.
Right, and your concern, among other things, among the actual cost itself, is the fact that this could drive people who really need the best kind of health care possible, the so-called Cadillac coverage, and it could drive them into a plan that maybe doesn't pay as the benefits as well or as much of it, but the premiums are less.
Right. Well, in that, you know, I think that the real difficult, and I would say, you know, that I don't think there really are any Cadillac plans, you know, anymore in the federal employee health benefits program, especially because there's very few that have what we used to call a high option, like with Blue Cross Blue Shield. So I think it generally the plans that we have available to us are what I would think are Ford and Chevy plans. But I think there's even plans. There's some plans that are worse than that. For retirees, it's especially important for them to be able to go see the doctor of their choice, and they can still do that under the preferred provider organization,
right,
for service plans in FEHBP, but less so. You know, but they don't have that kind of choice if they're in an HMO, and so and at least I know for our members, they want to be able to continue to have.
That's right. Older people, choice. Yeah, they're right. Heavily concentrated in Blue Cross. Dan Adcock, thank you very much for being with us today.
Sure,
I know you
Mike.
Had many things to do. We'll get you back later on. We're going to take a short break here. We'll be talking with Steve Watkins and Steve Losey of the Federal Times, and get the reporter's eye view of what's going on for feds in following the money. Be right back here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution
for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates, if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Here's Chuck Hume, the Deputy Chief Officer for Health Systems at the Department of Veterans Affairs on the Federal Executive Forum on Healthcare IT, sponsored by Deloitte.
And over time, we will know through our electronic data, evidence-based care that we know works because we have the whole history of populations of records and what they presented with and how they were treated and what worked and what didn't work, and we will be delivering much better health care.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Right now, you're being asked to connect doctors, patients, and providers online. Keep health data safe and secure and prepare for emerging health threats. Yes, if you're in government, your health care plate is heaped full. Turn to Deloitte. We have the people, insight, and experience to help you solve the most critical healthcare issues and help government help America. Insights and opportunities at Deloitte.com/federal.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it. And COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Based, Don't Cook. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS Health Beat. Summer is sun season, when lots of us cook ourselves until we're overdone by spending too much time in the sun with too little sun protection. The least these burns can lead to is redness and peeling skin. The worst is skin cancer. But proper use of sunscreens can reduce the risks. At the Food and Drug Administration, dermatologist Jill Lindstrom reminds us to follow FDA-approved label directions for sunscreens.
This includes applying, spreading it on thoroughly, and reapplying it at least every 2 hours, more often if you're sweating or jumping in and out of the water.
That's because waterproof or water-resistant sunscreens do wash off. To reduce your risk of sunburn, you can also avoid the sun when its rays are strongest, between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. And if you have a friend who's interested in federal matters or retiree matters, tell them to tune in. And reminder that we are archived on our homepage here, so if you can't hear the show today in its entirety, or if you want to hear it again at your leisure, you can do so by logging on tomorrow and listening whenever you have a chance. My guests for the second half of the hour are Steve Watkins. He's editor of the Federal Times, and senior Federal Times writer Steve Losey. Gents, you with us?
Sure am.
Good to be with you,
Mike. Hey, thank you. Thank you. As you know, I've been on vacation for 2 weeks, so I'm counting on you guys bringing me up to speed. Save me a lot of time and trouble. Well, we have a plate full of things here. Pay raises, pay freezes, possible COLA changes, changes in the way the cost of living inflation catch-ups are figured for retirees, maybe some action with health premiums, the possibility of what's going to happen with the thrift savings plan if they reach an impasse on this debt ceiling thing, and then, of course, the idea of requiring people under the Federal Employees Retirement System to kick in an additional 5%, which would be a permanent take-home pay cut for the vast majority of federal workers. I think you guys estimated it's about 90% of the people in government now are under the FERS system. So where to begin?
Yeah. Well, let me take a crack at that, but you're right. I think the big monster here that everyone's wrestling with is the debt ceiling and whether we're going to get a deal to resolve that. If not, excuse me, all sorts of nasty things are certain to take place, and we'll be happy to talk about that, and we've been following that pretty closely. And as you say, a number of the things that you've mentioned are in the context of those debt ceiling talks. The first contribution that would essentially have an effective 5% pay cut for feds, the health care premium possibly could fall into that, into any sort of debt deal. Same thing with the high five idea that we've talked about in the past. But let me go on to a few other items that we're following this week. In addition to that, we will be happy to get back to this, but we're expecting today to see some interesting fireworks at a House panel hearing overlooking the Federal Protective Service. Most of your listeners and our readers are quite familiar with how problematic that agency has been over the last few years. And so the House Committee, Homeland Security Subcommittee that oversees that agency is looking at whether the reforms that have been put in place are sufficient. In addition, we're expecting the first ever cybersecurity plan to come out from the Defense Department tomorrow, and we'll be covering that on our website as well. And then we're also following a story about the fast crumbling relationship between federal agencies and contractors. We have our reporter Sarah Chaco, who covers contracting, has been at a conference in Denver this week and is hearing from some senior contract executives saying that basically the relationship between the federal government and contractors is at a real low at the moment, and we can talk about that if you like. And then, meanwhile, we've got the appropriations that are starting to move through the House Appropriations Committee, and we're seeing quite a few cuts being taken to almost all agencies, some more than others, and we're tracking that pretty carefully. Obviously, we're anticipating bigger cuts in the House, and so whatever comes out of the House is certain to be muted by the Senate. And then, of course, Steve Losey, who's here to discuss a lot of this, is also following what's been going on with hiring reform, and that's been the big initiative by the Office of Personnel Management to streamline the way hiring is done at federal agencies, and so far we've seen some mixed reviews on all that. So that's kind of the big news that we've been tracking this week, and wherever you want to.
You're going to need more staff, obviously, just to keep track of these things. One thing, and I was not aware of this, but you mentioned that the crumbling relationship between contractors and federal agencies. I wanted to ask you about that because when the Obama administration took office, they said they wanted to bring a lot of contractor jobs back into government, sort of a reversal of the Clinton and the Bush policies where they outsourced everything they could find. But they were going to bring it back in, and there was talk of more than 100,000 jobs, new jobs. That all seems to be by the wayside, huh?
at least dramatically slowed down. There is still insourcing going on, but not nearly at the scale that I think people were expecting when this first kicked off, when the Obama administration first announced that they were going to make this an initiative. The truth is that there needs to be some insourcing. There are federal jobs that are being done by contractors that should not be done by contractors. And the reason they are being done by contractors is because federal workforces don't have the people with the right skills and experience in place to do that kind of work. A lot of that falls in the IT and the acquisition areas. And we've seen an awful lot of insourcing at the Homeland Security Department, for example, which has been extremely reliant on contractors, and even the Secretary Janet Napolitano has admitted that they are over-reliant on contractors for a lot of their administrative operations. So we're going to continue seeing that, but it's not nearly the degree that a lot of people were expecting. And the Defense Department, which also was doing a lot in this area, has slowed down quite a bit. I think top officials there have questioned whether, the savings they anticipated from insourcing is panning out, and I think there is some conflict that's been created by this with contractors who feel that to some extent the insourcing that has occurred has been fairly willy-nilly, not well planned, and so there's been some blowback from the contractor side on that. But the other thing that's kind of a wrinkle in the relationship is the fact that the administration is really pushing agencies to move away from cost-plus contracts and use fixed-price contracts to a much greater degree. Contractors say that's fine if it's for the right kinds of services and products, namely, fixed price basically is good for products and services where the costs and risks are very well known and stable, but the complaints that the contractors are making are basically that agencies are insisting on fixed price contracts even when the costs and the risks are not clear. And that, from the contractor's perspective, they say that unfairly puts a lot of the risk burden on the contractors that the government should be bearing.
Well, the Washington area, as we all know, particularly if you travel to any other city, has been almost immune to the recession. I mean, what's happened here is peanuts compared to places like Atlanta and Detroit and Dayton and just about anywhere else you can name. But part of that strength, of course, is the solid federal government presence, the payroll coming out every 2 weeks, and also the huge number of government contractors that are concentrated in the area. Now you've got Defense Secretary, the new Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, saying they want to hold defense civilian personnel levels at fiscal 2010 levels. Presumably that would mean a cut?
It would not necessarily mean a cut, but kind of a holding off on some of the hiring, particularly at the Office of Secretary of Defense and some of the so-called Fourth Estate defense agencies is primarily where that would be. But it would mean a lot less hiring. And that's something that Secretary Gates announced last August as part of his efficiency initiatives. One of the last things he did before leaving was try to set the department on a path to bringing some of its massive costs a bit under control. Now, just late last week, Senator Mikulski, Barbara Mikulski, sent a letter to the new secretary, Leon Panetta, saying this is a bad idea. These caps are arbitrary. They're just going to lead to contracting out of important inherently governmental duties. And instead of saying we should not have any more people above fiscal 2010 levels, she said that the department, she and other senators said the department should instead take a look at the costs and use those as the benchmarks for holding down costs.
We sort of watch the Defense Department. When it gets a cold, it's said that other federal agencies sneeze. And I wanted to ask you about that relationship. We need to take a short break here. Talking with Steve Watkins and Steve Losey from the Federal Times. Be right back here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? If a tree falls in the forest and no one is around, does it make a noise? Yep.
Be like the 4 million who switched to GEICO last year, and you too could start saving money. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Join me this week for my special guest, Jennifer Duplessis, a member of the Kearney team at George Mason Mortgage. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language? With no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills. You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know. That this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-600-6612 and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills, and the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-600-6612. That's 1-800-600-6612.
Retirement is expensive. You may need 70 to 90% of your pre-retirement income just to maintain your current standard of living. So how do you protect the money you've already saved from market fluctuations? How do you make sure you won't run out of money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Can't wait till Saturday? Then call me today at 301-773-3923.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
As we continue to engage government executives who are changing the way government does business, join us next week on location in New York City with special guest Stephen Goldsmith, Deputy Mayor for Operations for the City of New York. How is the city modernizing and consolidating operations for the 21st century? What is New York City doing to shape a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with New York City Deputy Mayor Stephen Goldsmith next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn, talking with Steve Watkins, the editor of the Federal Times, and Steve Losey, a senior writer for the Federal Times, and they're bringing us up to speed on what's been going on the last couple of weeks. And it, for this time of year, there really is a lot out there, isn't it?
Yeah, as you said, we need to quadruple our staff real quick.
Exactly.
There is an awful lot going on. We're trying to figure out what goes on page one, and that's a tough call.
And a couple of things. One is just, you're talking about the Defense Department, and if it's going to hold its personnel levels to fiscal 2010 levels, it doesn't necessarily mean layoffs, but it means much reduced hiring. And I assume, as you mentioned, the appropriation process, which is finally taking place now. And are we looking at possible layoffs here or hiring freezes? And what does this do to the buyout potential?
Well, I think it's unlikely that we'll see any layoffs or reduction in force or anything like that. Agencies are doing everything they can to try to avoid that, because that's a very ugly turn if it were to come to that. But it does mean that a lot of agencies are facing hiring freezes. And those hiring freezes at places like Justice, for example, they aren't likely to end anytime soon, because 2011, the budget situation was ugly. 2012, it's not looking any better. And more and more agencies we're seeing are looking into buyouts. And just a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They said they're thinking about offering buyouts and early retirements and things like that. So agencies are kind of pulling out every trick they have in their hat to kind of hold down these staffing levels, reduce their operating costs, and keep their head down and just get through what is the toughest budget situation we've seen in years.
Well, and the time for buyouts, too, is early in the fiscal year, if possible, to just get people off the payroll and not replace them. It's interesting you mentioned NRC, because usually federal agencies, as you well know, won't even talk about buyouts unless if they do talk about them and say we're considering them. That almost is a dead tip-off that they're going to do it.
That's right.
So NRC, are you hearing any other places?
Well, there's, I believe, education is thinking about it, and we've already seen agriculture ask for permission. The government printing office themselves, a month or so ago,
mm-hmm.
They said that they were going to try to buy out a couple of hundred employees. So we're seeing a lot of different agencies, big agencies, small agencies. It's a kind of running the gamut on which agencies are most likely to offer buyouts. Now, one thing that I have kind of noticed, and that experts say is a kind of a common occurrence, we're most likely to see sort of the smaller, more politically unpopular agencies probably turn to buyouts, because they're the ones who are less likely to get their requested budget increases. So it's going to be a much tougher environment for them. So that's kind of who is, I think, most likely to offer buyouts. But we will see a lot more.
Well, and I think too, a lot of people are frozen in time, and it's frozen in their mind that in the 1990s, when you had 180 to 190,000 buyouts and early retirements, and it started in defense, but then it became more or less government-wide. But the pattern since then has been that while Congress has liberalized it, as I understand it, made it easier for agencies to say, okay, we're going to have a buyout, the fact is that they're much more selective and surgical, and like in the case of agriculture, they're limiting it to two or three agencies. GPO, as you said, is specific jobs, the Postal Service, a different kind of buyout, but targeted jobs. So it's not just... If there's a buyout, it's not going to be everybody in your agency who was otherwise eligible will be offered one, right?
That's right. You know, the goal of buyouts is to lower your costs. And if you just offer buyouts across the board and you realize, oh, Bob took a buyout and we really need Bob, so we need to find a new Bob, that doesn't get you anything. It just gives you a lot more hassle, a lot more expense from having to run through the hiring process all over again. So what I've been noticing from agencies is they're saying, we're doing very, very targeted buyouts for, you know, GPO, for example, realized that they had more managers than they need to.
That's right, because otherwise you create a retiree for life who gets an annuity, and then you have to replace that retiree.
Yeah, so it's kind of the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, really. And the Postal Service did this many years ago, and they're still suffering from it, those members of Congress who can remember. There's so much stuff going on here. It's hard for me, and Dan Adcock was talking about it, it's hard to figure out where they are in the particular universe. You have recommendations by the Deficit Reduction Commission, which was the president's appointment. You have the Gang of Six, which became the Gang of Five, and I don't know if that old gang is even hanging around anymore. You have the budget process on the Hill. You have House Republicans doing their thing. And so some of these things are in place. Probably more are in the talking stage. And then you mentioned something about the high five and the high three. And this is one that's captured people's imagination, even though we have all said that in the scheme of things, this one is really small potatoes compared to some of the other stuff. But
right, the
idea is, instead of having basing annuities on length of service and the employee's highest three-year average salary, they would base it on length of service and the highest five-year average salary. And depending on who does the math and what grade level and salary there are, there is some loss in anticipated annuity. But some people say they could make it up by working another 3 to 6 months. Others say it's heavier than that. But that's one that you all haven't taken particularly seriously, right?
I've crunched the numbers on what moving from a high three to a high five would do. And it would most definitely have an impact on retirees if they, assuming they don't work longer to make up for it. It would cost them maybe a few hundred bucks a year, maybe a few thousand dollars over time. But what is a far more pressing, should be a far more pressing concern for federal employees is the proposal to equalize the contribution rates for the defined benefit portion of the federal employees' retirement system, because that would cost thousands of dollars a year, and over time it would cost retirees tens of thousands of dollars a year. That is a far more wide-ranging effect on federal retirees, in my opinion.
Right, and this is the one that would have FERS people kick in 5%?
5.8%.
Okay, they do 0.8 now, so they raise it to 5, and that would be a permanent reduction in take-home pay. So that is a big deal, and also it's a much bigger savings. So
yeah, exactly. That makes it a lot more attractive for the deficit negotiators. When you talk about the high five plan, in terms of total savings, that really is going to gain you maybe $400 or $500 million a year, whereas the FERS contribution readjustment, you're really talking about in the billions, $4 billion, something like that a year.
Yeah. So if you're going to, as I say, if you're going to jump off the ledge at the same time, you might as well get a big savings out of it. So what's coming up? We got about a minute left to go here.
We're going to look and see, again, what's happening with the Federal Protective Service so listeners can look to the Federal Times website to see what's happened there. We've looked at that agency in the past. It's quite troubled. The GAO investigators smuggled bomb components into federal buildings and reported about it. So it was about as embarrassing as it could be for FPS. We're going to see if Congress is happy with the steps taken. My guess is they're not, and hopefully we'll see some more action from the Hill on fixing FPS.
You know, it's always troublesome if you have any operation. The guards, the ones at the front door, are often they're in a very tough position, and that's where many of your problems surface. So, Steve Watkins, Steve Losey, thank you very much. See you next week this time. Have a good week, everybody. Remember, you can listen to this show anytime. We're archived on our homepage. Thanks for being with us. Have a good week.